This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is supported by Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now your host, Rick Moore.
And good morning, everyone. Thank you, thank you, thank you for being here on a beautiful Sunday here at WNRN. Special thanks to those listening to 91.9 and Harrisonburg's 95.1. I think this is going to be fascinating. It's topics like this where I know just enough to be silly and sound stupid and have the experts in the room to educate us. We're going to be talking today about kids and this what was listed as epidemic of allergies. Our guest today, Dr. Scott Cummings. Dr. Scott, how are you?
Doing well, thanks.
Say that one more time.
Doing well, thanks. Good to be here.
Well, and thank you for coming in on a nice, bright, sunny Sunday. We also have Karen Brooks Fox. She's a parent and a co-owner, full owner of Those Nut-Free Ladies.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Well, I appreciate it. And tucked away over against the wall, Kelly Jackson. Also a parent and a franchise owner of Panera.
That's it.
So let's jump right into it. I saw where this on the FAIR website, and Kelly, you directed me to that. What does FAIR stand for? F-A-R-E?
Food Allergy Research and Education.
So if you go to the FAIR website, foodallergy.org, you can learn all about some of the topics we're going to discuss today. But in reading about it, they call these food allergies for kids an emerging epidemic. Fascinating. I think many people would say that, yeah, it seems to be a lot more where people say they can't have this and they can't have that and we can't eat peanuts on the plane, and there's signs on all of our food about how this was made in a manufacturing center that has nuts, etc. So I'm curious, when we talk about kids and their allergies today, are we only talking about food allergies? And are there other allergies out there that are potentially fatal?
Well, when it comes to fatal-related reactions, if you will, food tends to be the largest issue. But certainly there are other causes of fatal allergic reactions that we know a fair amount about. One that comes to mind that we certainly deal with in Central Virginia is insect stings. Whether it's wasps, bees, or hornets, those are known to be fatal reactions associated in patients or persons who have allergic sensitization to the venoms. There are other food-related issues that have been around for a much longer time, and we think about perhaps adults with a shellfish allergy, so to speak. But by and large, if you're thinking about fatal allergic reactions, food takes precedence. There certainly are drug-related reactions, but often the fatal ones when it comes to drugs are those that are given in an infusion center or in the hospital. It's very unusual to have a fatal drug response to something, to a medicine that's taken orally.
Why is this show, I ask the guest rather than myself, why are we talking about kids? Is this because we don't find out these allergies until at a younger age? Is this because the body can't handle the reaction like might for an adult?
Well, one of the reasons that we talk about kids now and have a show like this today is the incidence of children with food allergy has risen dramatically. I mean, I constantly hear this notion at social gatherings or just in the public eye of, well, we didn't grow up with anyone who had a peanut allergy. And I think in large part, that's true. None of us that are adults at this stage really recall having friends that couldn't eat certain foods. That has changed remarkably over the past 10, 15, 20 years. So we have a whole generation now of children who have a tremendous number of their friends who have food allergy. If you look at the statistics, it's roughly one in every 13 children under the age of 18. So you play that forward, and that's essentially a child in every classroom that our kids go to school with who have food allergy. So there's a tremendous amount of awareness now where there was not before. And I think it truly has changed.
How many? What was the percentage you gave? One of 18?
One in 13 of children under age 18 has a food allergy.
So that's Dr. Scott Cummins. He's an immunologist at University of Virginia. We also have with us today Karen Brooks Fox and Kelly Jackson, parents to some kids with some food allergies. Karen and Kelly, we're talking about how the percentage has risen from the previous generation or two. In your case with your kids, is this genetic? Did you or your brother or someone else in your near immediate family have this problem so that it can be traced to that rather than just some of the other causes we'll talk about during the hour?
You know, in our family, my husband's side has a history of environmental allergies, nothing severe, common itchy, sneezy, runny nose.
We're talking about pollen and poison ivy and
sure grass,
right?
Some eczema, some itchy skin issues, but no foods. Other cousins my daughter's age have food allergies as well, but no adults on the family. And like, Dr. Cummins said, I never grew up knowing anybody with a food allergy. With our daughter developing food allergies, it was very unique to us. I'd never heard of anybody with a food allergy, which made it hard as a parent to research and find out what was going on with your child.
And I would say the same in our family. I did not have a history of food allergies, nor did my husband. And I remember when we found out in a unique way, usually a child has a reaction. In our case, when my son Dylan was moving to food, he lost a lot of weight. And our pediatrician thought, hey, he may have an allergy or an intolerance. And I thought at the time, well, that's probably not the case because we did not have that medical history. But in fact, when we went in, we found out that he was allergic to peanuts, tree nuts, egg, at that time, soy, dairy, and shellfish.
That's, Dr. Cummins, there are seven, is that right? The seven most frequent types of allergies?
Right. We talk about seven or eight major foods making up 90% of childhood food allergies. And that includes peanut, tree nuts, fish, including shellfish as well, wheat, soy, cow's milk, and egg.
And Karen, you're talking about how your son had five or six of these.
Yes, when he started out when he was one, he had several of those. He did outgrow the soy, the shellfish, and the dairy. And he's currently anaphylactic to egg, peanuts, and he's also allergic to three tree nuts.
And how, can I ask how old your son is now?
Yes, he's seven.
Seven. So you've been dealing with this for almost seven full years.
Correct.
And Kelly, give us a little background on your child's allergies.
Sure. My daughter's Lena, and she's six, and we found out she had food allergies at her first birthday when we had, a gathering of friends and family, and we give her a celebratory first piece of cake, and within minutes was covered in hives head to toe. Obviously was a big cause of concern for us, so multiple doctor visits and tests and things later, we found out that she was allergic to peanuts, tree nuts, eggs, sesame, and did have a skin reaction to strawberries. And she's recently been tested again for multiple foods so we could test if the levels are going up or down, and she has developed a new allergy to soy.
Dr. Cummins, is this... I mean, we have two parents in the room today whose children have multiple allergies of the seven or eight traditional foods or most allergy-causing foods. Is that standard? Is it more than one, or is the general to be that it's one of them that causes the problem?
No, it's often more than one. I would think both for Karen and Kelly's children that they have more than the average. However, it's not uncommon for us to see this at all, especially as kiddos are young, meaning 1 to 3. And then as they approach age 4 and 5, often we'll see 1 or 2 of the early allergens begin to wane and decrease over time. Occasionally you'll see new ones add in. That is a bit unusual, but some of that happens because these kiddos have to avoid so many different foods that we end up taking things out of their diet, and they may develop a sensitization because that we didn't know about because they haven't been eating it as a younger child. And so when we check their levels as they progress in age, we occasionally find new sensitizers. But
give me the 101 class description of how an allergy comes about. How is it that I am either born with or become allergic to something? How is my body making that happen?
Right. So we all make antibodies to various things. A lot of these antibodies we want because they fight infection, or they are made in response to a vaccination, so they keep us healthy. When allergies develop, our immune systems create a different class of antibody. It's called IgE. So when you hear food allergists talk, we talk about your level of IgE to cow's milk, egg, or peanut, etc. So we think that one of the main ways in which the body makes an IgE or allergic response is actually through the skin. There may be many other ways that this happens, but currently there's a lot of concern that we're seeing children who have eczema or atopic dermatitis developing food allergies as young children, less than 12 months of age. And then as they progress, their skin heals, but they retain that IgE, that allergic antibody response, to the foods that perhaps have gone through their skin. Now, there is a fair amount of uncertainty, if we're being honest, about how this truly develops. So there's a lot of work going on, but I think because of the rise in food allergies having been within the last 15 to 20 years, we have a lot of work to do on the research side to catch up to our understanding of how this truly happens.
And a little bit later on in the hour, we'll talk about some of how science is working, or surprisingly to me, not as up to date as I would have thought on allergies, and still learning a lot about it. It is 11:15 after the hour. Our guests today, Kelly Jackson and Karen Brooks Fox, both parents to some kids living a life with some serious food allergies. Dr. Scott Cummins, a immunologist at the University of Virginia. Stick with us.
Today's programming on WNRN is supported by
T&N Printing, serving Virginia since 1982. In addition to printing and copying, T&N specializes in construction document management, as well as dry mounting, binding, and mail services. T&N offers FSC-certified printing. T&N Printing can be reached at t-nprinting.com.
Rapture Restaurant on the Downtown Mall, featuring sustainable farm-to-table gourmet southern cooking for lunch, dinner, and late night, as well as Saturday and Sunday brunch. At R2, the dance club at Rapture Restaurant, it's Charlottesville Music Showcase with Marvin with Nefarious Characters Wednesday. That's R2 at 10 p.m. inside Rapture.
The Modlin Center for the Arts at the University of Richmond, presenting music, dance, and visual arts. The 2014-15 season features Bass Track, a multimedia experience that looks at the legacy of war upon veterans, adapted from the photographs and video taken by journalists in Afghanistan. Details at modlin.richmond.edu.
This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN,
brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And thanks for being with us again. We're talking about kids and allergies. Karen Brooks Fox, Kelly Jackson, Dr. Scott Cummings here today talking about the topic, of which I know squat. I do not have any kids. I do not have the closest I have to dealing with this is a brother-in-law in his 40s who has a shellfish allergy. Well, he knows what to eat and what not to eat. But Karen and Kelly, your children with the allergies, by the way, are the kids suffering from the allergies? Are they living with the allergies? There's always this proper frame of reference as to be politically correct. And you know, we got to be politically correct on this program. Are your kids suffering?
I say living with a food allergy. You know, we try hard to let our daughter do everything that every other kid can do.
But your daughter is six.
But she's six.
And Karen, your son is seven.
Seven.
Correct. So they have yet to reach the stage, or at least full stage, of like a teenager might be, and we'll talk about that a little later in the hour, where you can put a hefty amount of the responsibility onto them to make smart decisions on what they eat and what they touch and everything else. So, Kelly, let's start with you. How has your family life, your life at home, different than what the normal life may be of someone whose family doesn't have to deal with this experience?
Sure. Obviously, it affects, you know, where we go, what we do, where my daughter can, you know, she can't go spend the night at a friend's house without, you know, me teaching the parents how to use the EpiPens, without them making sure all the nuts are out of reach, without all the counters being clean. We can't fly on an airplane. So if we want to go on a vacation, we're driving. Even to my grandmother's funeral, we rented an RV and loaded up the family and drove because she can't, you know, fly on a plane.
Why? They don't serve peanuts anymore.
They do. They do serve peanuts on a plane. And
I thought we were all having pretzels now.
Nope. Some of us are having pretzels and some of us are having peanuts. They're even selling nuts on the plane. They can't restrict what passengers bring on themselves. And a lot of the airlines refuse to make an announcement about somebody on board having a food allergy. So, we just can't risk that if the airlines aren't going to, you know, be proactive and really work with us. Not all, but most airlines are really difficult to work with.
Is that, you talk about other people eating the peanuts or having the peanuts on the plane. Is that an especially difficult allergy for your daughter where just having the peanut in the air as opposed to just touching it or eating it? Or is, you know, why is that other people can have peanuts and that be dangerous if your daughter is sitting between you and your husband and you know she's not going to touch anything?
Sure. You know, you never know what somebody has eaten in that seat prior. So obviously we take precautions and wipe it all down. But and I think Dr. Cummins can really speak to this well. You know, nuts and peanuts especially are a life-threatening allergy. So we're not talking about hives. We're talking about throat closing, unable to breathe, potentially fatal allergy. And nuts have oils as well as dust. It can get into the vent system. It can get onto all surfaces. And that oil is, you know, very difficult to get off unless you use hot soapy water. And I'm telling you, the last time I was on a plane, that plane was not cleaned with hot soapy water anywhere.
But does your daughter have an especially sensitive allergy for this as opposed to Karen's son, who's or anyone else's son, Dr. Cummings, whose child may be able to go on a plane because they need to touch or eat the peanut?
Sure. I mean, she's off the charts with peanuts. You know, if she could sit next to somebody eating an egg and she's allergic to eggs, it's a different kind of allergy for my daughter.
So you can't travel or you
by
can't
plane.
Travel by plane.
Right.
And your daughter going over to spend the night at someone else's house requires special work. for that to happen. You have to work with the other parent.
Sure, and even birthday parties, you know, all the other kids can have cake, and I bake a special cake and bring it for her. School, working with schools can be really difficult depending on how flexible and understanding and willing the schools are to work with you. You know, there's snack time, there's lunch time, there's after school food time. So that, you know, that can be a challenge. But you work through it. You as a parent, your job is to protect your child and, you know, make them as happy and safe as possible. So that's what we work on, you know, on a daily basis.
Karen Brooks Fox, your son, similar age, 1 year older, I believe, is the allergy as sensitive? Do you have similar problems in terms of travel or your son spending the night elsewhere?
Definitely we do. When we first found out about the allergy at age one, the advice that we were given is always carry the emergency epinephrine and always make sure that Dylan is with someone who is able and willing to give, because that's the life-saving, you know, that would be what he needs if an accident happens. And that's what I find, that as an allergy parent, that I feel like I'm always, you know, you don't want that accident to happen, but a lot of times you are working to avoid that accident and that exposure, or thinking about what you will do if that exposure happens.
Do either of you have other children?
I do.
Do
you? I do not.
And it's just your daughter, this particular daughter who has these allergies?
You know, we're not sure yet. I have a 9-month-old, so we're hoping that she won't have the food allergies. But if she does, we'll, you know.
You're well-versed in what to do.
Ready.
Dr. Cummins, is this something that you see frequently? Are we talking about something that is genetic, so that just because one child has the allergy, the other child might not? Sort of blue eyes, brown eyes thing? Or are we talking about something that's more definitive? If one child has it, you can pretty well darn be sure that the other will as well.
Well, it's a great question, Rick. And so I think the answer is actually sort of multifactorial, but clearly genetics plays a role in this. We know that there certainly are twins. There have been twins in our peanut oral immunotherapy studies where...
What was that again? Your peanut...
Oral immunotherapy, which we like to call OIT because it's a mouthful.
Is that a joke? Your oral therapy, that's a mouthful?
Yeah, kind of was. So there are twins, brothers and sisters in the study, without a doubt. But equally, I have plenty of families where amongst two children, one has food allergies that are significant and severe, and the other child may be totally unaffected. So there's enough of a hint amongst the studies that have been published to date that I think we feel, depending on who you read, that roughly 30% of food allergy, so to speak, is genetically related or attributable.
We have Kelly Jackson here. We have Karen Brooks Fox, both of whom are parents of children living with fatal food allergies. We have Dr. Scott Cummins. He's an immunologist at the University of Virginia. Karen, so I'm sitting here listening to Dr. Cummins talk, and I look over and I see that Rusty's peanut granola bar is here on the counter. So when you go home, you leave here today, what's the protocol from being out in the world to coming home and hanging out with your son?
Well, that's an interesting question for me because it's changed over time. Dylan, when he started out at one and up until about four, was severely allergic. If he touched peanuts, or we had an incident where he touched a toy that someone else had touched and broke out in hives, and that person had had peanut butter for breakfast 2 hours before. Dr. Cummins mentioned oral immunotherapy. Dylan has been fortunate enough to go through oral immunotherapy with Dr. Cummins and has gone from not being able to touch or be around peanuts to being able to ingest half of a peanut a day. So it is really, that has changed our life. So before, I would have washed my hands as soon as I came out from anywhere before touching him. Now we don't have to go through that precaution.
let me get to be gender biased here, because Karen, your child is a boy and Kelly, yours is a girl. Is there, you know, do we have this bias where the boy is going to say, whatever, mom, I'm going to go play, and be less cautious about it than Kelly's girl? Or have you been able to, regardless of the gender, teach the child the care that needs to be taken to make this be less of a problem?
I think with Dylan, I see that he is very aware, and obviously as he's gotten older, his awareness has become definitely more about, and I think that he, with him, it is around the EpiPen and getting the shot. He has been through that experience, and
where he broke out and had to have the shot?
He went into anaphylaxis, so had trouble breathing, had the shot. So he remembers that experience. And so when we have had situations where he is being careful, he will mention, really, the shot is what stands out in his mind. I think that he's not so aware of touching things, but he is very careful to eat his own food that he brings. Even if we are going to a restaurant, he would prefer to eat his own food that he brings instead of taking a chance with outside food.
Do either of you get grief about that? Kelly, is that a similar situation? If you go out to eat, you take your daughter's own food? Or
most, sometimes there are, select restaurants that are really aware of what's going on.
I went out to eat last night, and that was one of the first questions that the waitress asked was, are there any allergies or situations that we need to be aware of?
Yeah, and that's great, and I think that that's something new, especially, here in Charlottesville, a lot of, privately owned, locally owned restaurants are really engaging with the food allergy community, really making it, a part of their business, which people like me really respect, and I will go out and only frequent those restaurants and give them all my business and talk about them online to all of my food allergy parents and really, help support their business as well. We do bring sometimes, but we're fortunate enough to be able to go out as well.
11:29 here on the Wake Up Call. Our guests today, Karen Brooks Fox, Kelly Jackson, and Dr. Scott Cummings, as we talk about kids and food allergies. Dr. Cummings, I think many people would say this is certainly an issue that's in the news at a greater level than it used to be. Is that because there are so many more kids who suffer from these allergies, who live with these allergies? And if so, why are the number of kids with this issue increasing?
That is the million-dollar question. There are countless theories and conjectures about why the rise in food allergies. But the heart of the matter at this point is the research is lacking, and we honestly don't know what the cause, if you assume there's one. So we need more research and education as we try to figure this out and put it together. It's a worldwide phenomenon amongst primarily the industrialized countries.
Folks, I haven't given out the phone number. If you have a question or a comment on the topic, you're welcome to call in and ask Kelly or Karen or Dr. Cummings your needed information. Make your comment 434-979-0919. That's 434-979-0919 if you want to ask a question to our guest today about kids and food allergies. So, Dr. Cummings, let me ask a few questions about possible causes. And Kelly and Karen, please speak up if I hit one that strikes a nerve. GMO foods, I've seen that as one of the causes listed as, if that blank toe company would stop making GMO-produced foods, we wouldn't have this problem. Has that been listed as a possible cause in the medical world?
Well, that's on the list. I'm not sure that it's in the top two or three, but I often get the sense that if you're truly committed to that line of thinking, that you become almost a zealot in that sense, and you perhaps ignore other possible.
So you're looking for that to be a problem.
That's been my sense.
Kelly, Karen, have you found that to be a topic of conversation in the groups, families, parents with kids who also suffer from the allergies?
Well, I'll say that when I talk to fellow allergy parents, of course, we too want to figure out what happened. What did we, you know, what did we do wrong? If you have multiple children, people want to know, was it something during pregnancy? Did I eat too many peanuts there? Did I eat too few? You know, it's something that we all strive to understand as well. And what part may we have played in it? And in talking to people, I found no common denominator. And I have heard theories, the GMO, the, you know, us being too clean. And I can assure you, yes, I can dispel that one.
Too much too much sanitizer, not enough dirt.
Right.
You know, the kids, you know, wipe your hands with a 99% alcohol hand sanitizer and too much time inside rather than rolling around in the dirt outside. Kelly, you're shaking your head.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I've heard it all. I've heard it all from relatives telling me what I did and didn't do.
Everyone becomes an expert on the topic.
Everybody becomes an expert.
That's my role here.
Right. So, you know, I don't know. I'm not a doctor. I'm gonna leave that up to Dr. Cummings to tell us what's going on.
Has that been listed as a possible, I mean, a theoretically, you know, possible rather than just one of those things you toss out there about where the aliens are?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I think one of the most popular theories is this idea of what people call the hygiene hypothesis. Unfortunately, there's a long story related to the hygiene hypothesis. And as it's originally stated, it really doesn't fit time-wise with our rise in food allergies. Because if you're truly divorce yourself of the political and social ramifications and implications of the hygiene hypothesis, by 1920s, 1930s, we had clean water, we were wearing shoes, and we were largely sanitary. But we didn't get a rise in food allergy until the early 1990s. Yes, there was a rise in hay fever in 1930s, 1940s, but I don't believe that the hygiene hypothesis as it's originally stated explains our rise in food allergy that we've seen today. That being said, the skin, as I mentioned before, the skin seems to be a fantastic way to make an IgE response. And which is an allergic response. And one of the things that impresses upon me about this whole field is this happens at a very early age, right? These children can be identified at 6 or 9 months of age, certainly by a year. I mean, Kelly's story about the first birthday party is an exceedingly common theme. So whatever is happening at a early on.
I just find this to be so fascinating. Our guests today, Karen Brooks Fox and Kelly Jackson, parents and business owners. We're going to get into this in just a few minutes. Business owners that work with these allergies to help prevent them and deal with them. Dr. Scott Cummings, he's an immunologist at the University of Virginia. 434-979-0919. Be right back.
WNRN thanks the following for their support of Independent Music Radio.
Whole Foods Market Charlottesville, supporting Service Dogs of Virginia and the Women's Initiative when you bring your reusable bag. Whole Foods picks up the tab for public classes every week. On Thursday the 14th, you're invited to Summer Sweets cooking class at 7 p.m. You can find Whole Foods Charlottesville's class schedule at wholefoodsmarket.com.
Black Bear Composting. Now offering home composting services in Stanton, Waynesboro, Harrisonburg, and Charlottesville to reduce your waste while improving your soil's health. Black Bear picks up your food scraps weekly and brings back a bucket of finished compost monthly. Black Bear Composting has services for businesses, schools, and bulk compost. BlackBearComposting.com.
Hello, I'm Kim Sokol from Dark Skies Bright Kids, an entirely volunteer-run program out of the UVA Astronomy Department with the core mission of enhancing science education, targeted at underserved schools in Central Virginia. Dark Skies Bright Kids from UVA is hosting the 4th annual Central Virginia Star Party on August 23rd at Albemarle Cider Works in North Garden, starting at 6 p.m. The Star Party will feature sky-gazing through telescopes, night sky tours, planetarium shows, cider tasting, and local food trucks. There will also be a raffle for prizes, including a private evening at McCormick Observatory. This event is free and open to everyone. In case of cloudy skies, the Star Party will be moved to August 30th. For more information, astro.virginia.edu/DSBK. I'm Kim Sokol, making a community connection on WNRN.
Make your community connection with WNRN. Email connection@WNRN.org with your nonprofit event or organization's information. Independent Music Radio, WNRN.
This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And thank you so much for being with us today. Again, we're talking about kids and allergies. For those interested, next week we'll be talking with veterinarian Dr. Mike Feetz. We'll return to call in with questions about your pets and your animals and what to do. But today, Karen Brooks Fox, Kelly Jackson, Dr. Scott Cummings, talking about kids and allergies. So we had a call from Paul in Columbia, Virginia. Is there a correlation between kids not having breast milk and allergies?
No, there's no hard and fast correlation there. The advice from the American Academy of Pediatrics is, if possible, for mothers to nurse for 6 months, as there is some indication that that may be a bit protective, but it certainly is not a cure-all or a panacea. Certainly plenty of children who are nursed end up with food allergies.
Now, Dr. Cummings, you sent me some information and for me to prepare for today. And as I read the clinical review, and granted, this was from 2010, so I don't know how much of this has changed. But some of the quotes that I found in the review: there is no clear consensus exists regarding the prevalence or most effective diagnostic approaches. There is a lack of uniformity for criteria for making a diagnosis. So in 2010, and if this is still true information today, we don't even know how to determine if someone suffers from this disease.
That's true. We, as a field, are struggling with what often people have in terms of diagnosis being a skin test or a blood test. But the true gold standard is to feed a child or an adult a food to which they are allergic or sensitized, is the proper verbiage, but and then see if in fact that individual reacts. As you can imagine, if Kelly or Karen bring their children to me and my first response is that we should challenge them with these number of foods.
Right, they had peanut butter and they broke out, and okay, well, let's give them some peanuts to prove that you're right.
Right. So yes, we clearly as a field need improved diagnostic technology. At the moment, what we do is detect this IgE or allergic antibody, and we can do that either by blood test or by skin test, but that in and of itself proves only that a person is what we call sensitized. So they're making that allergic response. To prove that they're in fact allergic, you must document the actual clinical response.
All right, there's another quote from this clinical review. Quote, there's not even a universally accepted, well, I think I put the there's not. There's not a universally accepted definition of food allergy.
Again, this is true. People can make a mistake of, well, my skin test was positive to shrimp. But unless eating shrimp produces a reaction, what is considered a food allergy? Is it the skin test? Well, most would say no. But it is a point of contention for sure.
I just think that's, it just seems so, I don't know, we're here in 2014. We've mentioned several times throughout the hour that this has been ongoing, or at least a rapidly increasing problem since the early 1990s, I think you said. Mm-hmm. And to me, and I guess just being so caught off guard because I don't have a child with an allergy of this sort, I'm not medically taught in this field, but why is this so difficult that 20 years later we haven't figured out some pill to give the child to make the problem go away?
And we would love to do that. At the moment, there are ongoing studies.
We have an ointment for poison oak and poison ivy. We can't do something about peanuts.
Please, ladies,
I'm not trying to lessen the problem. I'm not joking about the issue itself.
But I think for us as a field, if you look at the history, and my sense is this is going to be more than you want to get into, but the short story is that really cutting edge trial was going on, and there was a death that occurred in a child during the study. And I think in large part that has set us all back in the field, and we're making strides again, but the ramifications are so different than treating poison oak or poison ivy, because if you make a mistake or advocate the wrong position, you may well end up with a child who dies.
All right, so we have a caller. Let's there we go. Let's see. Well, I got a question here. I think I might have lost Abby because I waited too long. So we have a question from Abby in Harrisonburg. Adult food allergies, is there an anxiety resulting from onset of adult food allergies? So is there anxiety involved? And that sort of falls into something that I have a little later on. So let's tie these together. Is that in some of the clinical review, self-reporting was done as one of the ways to study. And so can allergies be psychological in any way? Certainly not for a 6-month-old, a 9-month-old, but can allergies be in any way psychological?
Well, this is a pretty well-studied and documented area of concern. And so for me, Rick, I think one of the important points for the listeners is that everyone's walk, so to speak, in food allergy is different. My own 8-year-old has food allergies, but they're not as severe as Karen and Kelly's children's food allergies. So in terms of adults, when it gets to some people prefer to avoid a certain food, and gluten is one of the common themes we hear these days. Patients are not having anaphylaxis, going to the emergency department, needing epinephrine if they happen to have some gluten. Often they feel better off gluten, and that particular person may say, I'm allergic to gluten. Would I technically say that patient has a food allergy? No, we consider that a food intolerance. So there are certain foods that make us feel not so great, and we tend to avoid them. And if you casually self-report in a study, then you might end up with a high number of quote-unquote food allergies. But technically, that's probably not an IgE-based food allergy that's going to lead to anaphylaxis.
That's Dr. Scott Cummings. He's an immunologist at the University of Virginia, one of our guests today as we talk about kids and allergies. We also have Kelly Jackson and Karen Brooks Fox, who are not only parents of children dealing with fatal food allergies, but businesses. Because if the issue becomes larger, then there are businesses out there who either need to serve the public for it, and there are others, of course, who are just trying to make money off the issue. And ladies, both of you deal with food businesses. Karen, those nut-free ladies, and Kelly, an owner of Panera, a franchise owner of a Panera. So, Karen, let's go with you first. What prompted you? I mean, what was the final step that got you to open your business, and what does the business do?
Sure. Well, my friend Amy Barber and I, we lived in the same neighborhood and both had children that had multiple food allergies. And we realized that we would not be able to order a birthday cake from a bakery. We together decided to take a cake decorating class because we knew that we would be doing this together. We would need to do this rather than being able to order something. And at Dylan's third birthday party, I had made cupcakes that looked like a pumpkin patch. And they had no egg, no nuts, obviously. And I was getting a lot of feedback from the parents saying, hey, I can't even tell the difference, and these look great. And the owner of Snippets, which is a haircut place for kids, and they have parties there, she said, you know, we have a lot of customers that are now coming to us and saying, we can't use your cake. I think that you should really think about providing this service for other people. And that really started to get our wheels turning about if this would be a possibility. And then I started just hearing story after story of a kid not being able to eat a cake at a birthday party, or that a mom forgot and the kid just had to eat a muffin or had to sit there. And that was, and hearing one of those stories is really what pushed us to start.
And how long have you been open?
So it's been 4 years now.
And how can people find you?
We have a website, Facebook page, thosenutfreeladies.com.
Okay. We also have Kelly Jackson. So, Kelly, we go from Karen's privately owned business to Panera, which on a grander scheme. And so tell me what you do at your Panera franchise. And I'm curious about did you have to work through the national chain to be able to do this, or does the national chain already function under this?
Sure. You know, I can't speak for the national chain. I can speak for my family-owned franchise. It's my parents and my husband and I. And we have multiple locations here in Virginia, as well as Memphis, Tennessee, Mississippi, and a few other places. Being a parent of a child with food allergies, obviously I'm always doing research. I'm always reading articles. I'm always talking to other parents. And I logged on to FAIR's website one day, and, you know, the big flashing screen was saying 16 million people and growing. Well, you know, the business part of me took over and said, 16 million people. Well, not many people go out to eat by themselves. So now 16 million people has turned into, 30-some million people, and if you take parents and kids and you start multiplying how many people you go out to eat with, we're talking, 50 million, 60 million people, and that really impacts our business. So we, not being allergy aware in the restaurant business, we are leaving out potential customers, and that's not a good business practice. We want everyone to be able to come to our locations and enjoy our food. Now, I cannot say we are allergy safe. We have food in our locations that have common allergies: nuts, eggs, seafood, sesame, But what we did do when we looked at our business was, what could we do to educate our associates and be more aware of food allergies?
When you say associates, you're talking about your employee, your staff.
Yep, our managers, the people that are working in our cafes every day. So we sent some people to an AllerTrain certification class in Colorado. They took these seminars and got certified by a great company called AllerTrain, which works with restaurants, big restaurants. They came back. We've trained all of our management staff, and we're working through training every one of our associates, anyone in our cafes, just about what is a food allergy. What do you do if someone has a food allergy? We have special kits. If you came to one of our locations and said, hey, I have a egg allergy. We pull out a special allergy kit. It has a cutting board, a special knife, special utensils. We go back in our fridge or freezer, reopen product, you know, open for the first time products to try to avoid cross contamination. We cannot guarantee, but we're making steps to try to be better. If you know better, you do better. So that's what we're trying to do.
Ken, how about an Epi device? Can anybody use that? If you had one in your location, and I'm not talking about the insurance issues that may go along with that, but if you had one in your Panera, can you offer it to someone to use who starts to have an issue in your business or out on the sidewalk? You know, can you do that as a nice person, or do the Epi devices need to be groomed for weight of the person and whether or not they're, you know, whatever else might be involved?
Yeah, I think Dr. Cummings can speak to this, but my 6-year-old daughter has a talking EpiPen. It's called an AviQ. You pull off the top and anyone could use it because it tells you what to do and how to use it, which is awesome.
Dr. Cummings?
So there are Good Samaritan laws that protect folks who try to do the right thing, perhaps, and administer epinephrine to someone who has a reaction and either can't administer their own or don't have it with them or for whatever reason are unable to provide that.
And unfortunately, still, people get sued. Let's talk the issue that brought me into having the three of you come together on a beautiful Sunday for this. Back in June, there was something called Craft for a Cause. Kelly, I ended up talking with you first.
Hey.
Tell me about that, what it was, and is there another one planned in the future?
Sure. This was really just the beginning of our campaign to educate people on food allergies as well as raise funds for more food allergy research at UVA. I love to raise funds. Our organization is very philanthropic, and we thought through brainstorming what can we do that the kids can participate in the fundraising and really feel like they're making a difference not only for themselves but also with their friends with food allergies. My daughter and I love to make crafts. We go to Michael's all the time, and we thought, wouldn't it be great to have a craft fair, a kids' craft fair? So we had over 35 children sign up. They brought their own homemade wares and crafts and sold them and donated 100% of their proceeds to Dr. Cummings and his research. And it was very successful. We're definitely going to do it again next year, and we hope to add more events to it.
So, Karen, that's Kelly Jackson talking about the Craft for a Cause. We also have Karen Brooks Fox here with us, a parent, Dr. Scott Cummings. So we talked briefly about traveling and your kids going over to another person's house. Does your son have friends come over? Is that something that can still happen? And what's the, for lack of a better word, the protocol to make that happen?
My son does have friends come over. But he has not had a play date with someone else without me there. Also, Kelly mentioned the birthday parties. I have also attended every birthday party, and I do feel like, okay, he's getting older. I'm the only mom that hangs around, but I do still hang around at birthday parties. I do think about the sleepovers, summer camps. Dylan went to 3 summer camps this summer. One of them I did stay at while he was there. So it does, as we've all mentioned, it affects your daily life. I do think about how will it be as he gets older? How will it be as he dates or as he goes off? And I wish these things for him that he can go off to a camp or go to a sleepover or a party. Right now it does affect our life and our travel. Just being able to just go and just eat out or eat breakfast or eat lunch. Those are things that are definitely difficult for us. And just getting out of your bubble of your home, I think, is something that you just always have to think through.
So if he has a friend come over, what do you have to do? I mean, you, you call the other parent and say, "This need, you know, we'd love to have your son or daughter come over to play, but this needs to happen to make it so?"
Yeah, I'll say that usually the people that come over are people that we have had a relationship with for a while, and I know that they understand Dylan's allergies, and so I am just aware of what they're eating, and if they're eating, I'm usually around and watching and making sure that there's no issue there.
11:56 here on the Wake Up Call, talking about kids and allergies. I just want to remind you that WNRN and the Wake Up Call, we're looking for a producer for the show. If you have interest in the program, you're available to volunteer at least a couple Sundays a month and have a basic ability with computers, we can teach you the rest. Stop on by WNRN or call us up. Ask for Melissa Good. Help us out. So we were talking about your kids interacting with the real world and the real world coming to you. Kelly, you talked about taking your daughter out and she brings her own food. Do you get the stares from whoever the waiter or waitress is or others at the restaurant when your daughter opens her brown paper bag and sure. pulls out her sandwich?
Sure. You know, who cares? Go ahead and look. You know, I'm going to go out and I'm going to take my daughter out. And, you know, we are usually very forthcoming. We let the restaurant know, hey, we're going to be ordering, but my daughter has food allergies. We brought her own food. And I would say 99% of the time, everybody is very gracious and understanding. We might get some strange looks from other customers, but that's okay.
Do you carry, and this is a real question, not meant to be difficult.
Sure.
But do you carry the little handy wipes in your purse so you can wipe down the booth and the table that she sits at?
Sure. I got a mom bag. I got medicine. I got wipes. I got Benadryl. I have, you know, you name it, I have it probably in my bag, like every mother.
What about, you know, at what point does your child reach the stage where the greater percentage of self-care comes to play? Karen, you talk about you're the only mother still going to the birthday parties. And you mentioned, I think, dating at some point. But at what point do you put your son in charge of his own self-awareness and self-care?
I think that's a great question. I think it probably determined by the maturity of the child and their situation, the severity of their allergies. What we've seen with Dylan is obviously through preschool, he needed everyone around him to be able to care for him, have a watchful eye, watch what he was eating. As he's gotten older, I would say in the last year, we have made him more responsible for carrying his EpiPen and for identifying his own food that is safe. The next step would be to see when he can self-administer the EpiPen, and I think that will just depend on that depends on every child's comfort level and their independence.
Kelly, a few seconds left on your plans for your daughter in the future.
You know, she self-carries. We educate her. We practice using the EpiPen on a daily basis, and I think our goal is to keep her safe. Work towards letting her participate and be just like every other kid out there.
And Dr. Cummings, for people who are interested in your therapy, your medical studies, how do they get in touch with you?
Well, I'm on faculty at the University of Virginia, and they can easily find me on the UVA website.
Proper spelling is C-O-M-M-I-N-S.
Correct.
All right. Thanks to all three of you for coming in today.
Thanks for having
us.
And
thank you.
Best of luck with the study and with the care as you move forward with your kids. All right, everybody. Enjoy your day.
This has been your Sunday Morning Wake Up Call on WNRN. The Wake Up Call is supported by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at wakeupcall@wnrn.org. The Wake Up Call is produced by Brandon Wong
and Max Cecilia Struther.
Tune in next Sunday morning at 11 for The Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.